T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Okay, we're going live. It says preparing the stream. I think we're live on YouTube, but I got
live on YouTube. Good afternoon, Nicole.
No, it was supposed to be, but now it's not. It was a great yesterday. It was a great night last night. It was a good morning, but I'm a little dumbfounded.
Yeah, well, then you got to remember with what's happened here. You got to remember what John Lennon said. It'll all be okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end.
It'll all be okay, Shannon, in the end.
Okay, there you go. Okay, Shannon.
Nobody knows how to pronounce his name unless they talk to somebody who's at the bottom of this. So yeah, Oak Shannon.
So we were about to talk about the Oak Shannon notes. And we had discussed it with a number of people. We're doing Jimmy Church, who may be listening now. I was supposed to do Jimmy Church tonight. We're supposed to do Dave Scott tomorrow. And we were supposed to do Project Unity as a panel on Friday. And then about a few minutes ago, I suddenly got a message from Oak Shannon, which I will read here. First, I'll read the letter to Oak Shannon from Jay at Project Unity. Hang on, I'm not as tech savvy. He writes to Oak Shannon. Now, we were going to discuss Oak Shannon, and to give people background who Oak Shannon was. Oak Shannon was a minor member of a group which was known in the 1980s as the UFO Working Group. The story leaked to the New York Times, and they wrote a book on this group. And it's after I released about 2002, 2003, I released a portion of the front page of the documents that we're going to talk about today, which described it as the Advanced Theoretical Physics Conference. And then it started being called the Advanced Physics Theoretical Working Group. And John Alexander, who ran the group, started to talk about it like that, admitted that the group had actually existed. And what it was John Alexander, as I've described numerous times in ufology, Ufology just repeats itself. It's like the Bible says, nothing is new under the sun. And there's nothing new under the sun in ufology. It just keeps going. In the 1950s, the U.S. Air Force was giving advice to people doing UFO movies. My friend Bob Emmenegger was contacted in the 1970s to do a documentary on UFOs where they leaked material. He was contacted again in 1983 to do another documentary. He turned it down. And in 1985, John Alexander put together about 20 people in a special top secret SCIF environment where these people talked about UFOs. And the idea was to get funding, to get the US government to do research. And what you see, that has been repeated. That's what Tom DeLonge did. He had McCaslin, McKay, and Robert Weiss from Lockheed Skunk Works. He had a general from NRO. He had people from NASA. He had all these people who were advising him, and they were trying to get the government to do it. And then in 2016, Jim Semivan went to the high CIA and all the three-letter agencies and told them, you guys can't get this out. We're going to release it. And then I was told in 2016 by Chris Bledsoe, a number of high-level people are going to come public and they are going to say UFOs exist and they are going to disclose. And then Jim Semivan came forward and Lou Elizondo came forward and Justice came forward and Chris Mellon came forward and all sorts of high-level officials came forward and said UFOs exist and this has to be declassified. So what we're going to talk about today is the 1985 effort by John Alexander and John put this group together. Now, the one that we've got today is Oak Shannon. Now, I knew Eric Davis back in the early 2000s, and Oak is stating right now, as we speak, that he doesn't really know where I got it. I clearly identified in Twitter messages to him where I got these documents, how I got these documents, how it was set up. And that was that Oak had a heart attack many years ago. And that was about the time that I knew Eric Davis. And Eric Davis had given me notes that were taken by Oak Shannon at this meeting where 20 people with top secret SCI clearances were sitting down and were discussing various UFO subjects and trying to get funding from the US government. Now, Melinda Leslie has a set of documents that were released that she got out of Jack Houck's files after he died, which are his notes from this meeting. And in her meeting, she has actual budgets, what the budget was, how much money they wanted from the US government. My notes don't have the budget, but it has a lot of stuff that was recorded by Oak Shannon in this meeting that described what they were talking about and fairly detailed notes. So Oak Shannon was not a major member. Most people did not know who Oak Shannon was until a couple of years ago. And that was because I was given four documents from the Edgar Mitchell collection of documents. And one of those documents was what's now called the Wilson leak document or the Wilson Davis documents. And that was a conversation that was had between Eric Davis and Admiral Wilson, who was then, who at one point had been the J2, the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And these questions were being put through, and this Admiral was telling various things to Eric Davis. Eric Davis put together a memo for NIDS, and then that document leaked once Edgar Mitchell died. I was given a copy of that document. I really didn't want to look at it. I was busy. I was in Laughlin, Nevada, talking to James Rigney. I told him, I don't have time to look at your document. And he said, 10 minutes. Give me 10 minutes. I sat down. And as soon as I saw this document, I saw a name on there, Oak Shannon, on the first page of that document. And I immediately knew this was a real document. This was an important document because only I knew who Oak Shannon was. I knew because I had Oak Shannon's notes from 20 years ago. And Oak was very, very sick. And Eric Davis said, if he dies, you can release these notes. And Oak recovered, and Oak is still alive today. And then what happened was Project Unity, Jay from Project Unity, went through a lot of effort and got an interview with
wait, Grant, let's back this up a little bit, because yeah. I think the part that the public knows is the Wilson documents made their way to Reddit, which was you via Chase. Yeah. And then they kind of exploded with the 2017, you know, they were kind of piggybacking off everything from 2017.
Yeah.
We also launched a big discussion panel on this where you and Richard Dolan and Melinda, Leslie, like all of our big disclosure team buddies kind of started going through this. And Project Unity was involved at that phase too. If I'm remembering correctly, this is when he got the document. Did you give Jay, did you give him that front page or did he pull that off the internet himself? Because you have shared it.
I that's the thing. I've talked about the Wilson Leak, the Oak-Shannon notes many times. I've put little pieces like the front page I put on. So you may have got it off the internet. I put on many years ago. I posted the names of the people. And I was asked by when it first broke, I was asked by how it put off. Well, I understand you've got some notes from a meeting that I supposedly had been involved with. And I said, yeah. So I sent him the names and I never heard anything more from him. So I've put little pieces on the internet. Yes.
You have. I've helped you put little pieces on the internet. So it's fun now seeing all the pieces come together finally. And yeah, I think that brings us up to speed a little bit. There has been some behind the scenes people. They've asked you over the years why you haven't released your set. And I know that you've told them, you know, flat out about this death agreement clause between you and Eric. So, I mean, people don't know you as well as I know you, but you stick to your word. Like you weren't going to break that just because Oak survived his heart attack and his health. Yeah. And you haven't released them through pressure from your friends and other people. I know they've asked you to release this information and you've also been diligently trying to archive your archive or digitize your archive.
Yeah.
So all this is kind of floating out there in the ether. And honestly, a few people have picked up the page from the internet that you have shared. You know, our friend Joe Merja has talked about this and worked his angles through, you know, back channeled it back to Eric Davis himself. I think people are aware that Eric Davis gave you these notes. They're also talking about the set of notes that Melinda Leslie has, because Melinda has been talking about the advanced theoretical physics working group for as long as time can remember.
Yeah.
She lectured on it. She has shared her slides and her group of notes are from the same meeting. They're just from a different person, not Oak Shannon's. Hers are from Jack Horrick, and he's deceased and long gone. And Melinda got those notes from Jack's wife. She was friends with both of them. She was taking remote viewing courses and classes from Jack. So with you guys collaborating over the years, you guys do know how your notes back each other up and feed into the Wilson documents. So it's been kind of exciting. For me, I mean, as soon as Project Unity hosted and interviewed Oak Shannon, I had wondered how much of this thread he was going to pull. So this has all been exciting because A, he talked. I mean, do you
public? Yeah, he went public.
Do you consider Oak like a Collins elite? Like, I mean, none of the Collins elite ever talk.
No.
You know, a lot of these, I mean, you've seen the charts and graphs and lists that we all keep, like Hal Putoff is like a level 15, 14, you know. Oak Shannon isn't as high up as somebody in crossing over with all these groups, but he is an important character and these notes do add insight. And yeah, so I was excited to go through the notes now that Oak talked about them and Oak emailed you and kind of approved them.
Yeah, I went to Oak. I went to Oak because what happens is I announced as soon as Oak went public, then everything sort of changed because he went public with the whole thing and he talked about this five-dimensional physics that they were working on and his UFO sighting and his near-death experience sighting and his connection to the Wilson Leak document. And he actually talked about this to Jay on the interview there. The only connection he had, he wasn't Collins elite. He knew Wilson and he also knew Davis. So Wilson had come to him and said, what do you think about, he was doing a background check on Eric Davis. what do you think about Eric Davis? Is he trustworthy, whatever? And he got a glowing review because he said Eric Davis was a good guy to talk to and stuff like that. That's his only connection to this whole thing. He's not a UFO guy or anything like that. And so he had the connection. So when he went public, then I posted, as soon as Jay was promoting his interview with Oak Shannon on Twitter, I went on Oak Shannon on the Twitter page, and I said, now that Oak has gone public, what's the point of holding these notes back? I might as well now go, because Oak Shannon is now public as a UFO guy and describing what happened. So Oak had put a message on Twitter to me and said, I'm not going to stop anything, but I would like to see the notes before you release them. So I said, fair game. I mean, I have no problem. So I scanned all the notes. I sent them to Oak Shannon, and he basically said, well, I don't even know what these things are about. I mean, it, you know, it's sort of like, what was this all about, and how did you get the notes? And that's when I described, I said, this was this 1985 meeting by your friend John Alexander that was set up. And I got them from Eric Davis when you were sick. And he said, if Oak dies, you can release these notes. And I've held them. And then when you went public, I decided that the time was right that we put this out, because now you're a public figure. And he didn't have any objections to this. He didn't really reply to me. And then maybe you can go through what happened this morning. Have you got the email open, or should I open the email?
You can open it. I haven't. It's buried in about 20 emails of mine now at this
point. Okay. So this morning, I didn't answer my emails because I was getting inundated with a bunch of people who wanted to scoop the story. I had a producer for a documentary who wanted me to hand the notes over to him for his documentary. A lot of people wanted to scoop the story, to get the notes and just go with it. So you know as well as I do that we had a number of requests for interviews immediately, and everybody wanted to be first, and they were sort of like, you got to do it with me first. I want to be the first to release these notes, and everybody's trying to cash in on this thing. So I basically didn't answer any emails, and I made you in charge of being the bad guy, right?
I'm the bad guy.
You're the bad guy. So I said, you're going to arrange it to Nicole, and I'll do interviews with whoever at whatever time about this, and people can bring the notes. But I can't do everybody first. And so we had set it up where I was going to do Jimmy Church tonight, our friend Dave Scott tomorrow. And you had arranged with Jay to do a panel.
We got to back it up, because Melinda Leslie has been like, we have to release ours together congruently, publish them.
So we were going to do that tomorrow. We're going to do Melinda and you and I and compare the notes. And one correction to what you said, Melinda has not seen these notes either. Right. Nobody saw these notes. This is the first. I didn't show them to anybody. You're the first person outside of whatever Eric Davis showed them to actually see these notes. So Melinda has not seen the notes. I've seen her notes, or most of her notes. But so we were going to do Melinda tomorrow, and then we were going to do this panel on Friday with Jay that you had organized. And then this morning, just as we're ready to go live on YouTube, I get a note from Oak Shannon, basically blocking the release. So let me read what Oak Shannon says to me. He said, he's writing back to Jay at Project Unity, and he said, I am not entirely comfortable with the release. I do not, in capitals, know how he got them. And I told him exactly how I got the notes. I suspect from Eric Davis. He got them at some point and gave them to him, and that they be kept close until I was gone. I cannot be certain what the fallout will be. I wish he would release them through your site or not release them at all. And then that was in response to Jay's posting, where he sent a letter this morning. He had talked to you and had agreed to the panel on Friday. And then he wrote to Oak Shannon.
Let me clarify that, because the whole time I asked, or I committed you and asked Jimmy or Jay, sorry, for the date, and he kind of left it open-ended, and then he didn't check messages with me. And I asked him to email you, and he didn't CC me on any emails. Jimmy gave dates. Jimmy Church gave dates and times. Dave Scott gave dates and times. Just this morning, Jimmy Ando messaged me about Friday being okay, and that he would contact Richard Dolan, Melinda, me, you, and set a time. And then now this happens. So that's why I'm perturbed.
Well, this is ufology. Welcome to ufology. Right. And the way what caused it, Jay, we just talked to you just talked to Jay on the phone, and he said he had nothing to do with it. But if you listen to his email, he absolutely did.
He's messaging me right now still. So I'll check when we're done.
Well, he's probably upset that we're live on the air. He wants us to go off the air now. He said to Oak Shannon, he said, Are you comfortable with this, sir? I have tried to contact Grant to suggest he does this with me. May I ask how he got these notes? I assume you must have some direct relationship with him in the past. And the whole thing was Jay didn't have the notes, and he's basically saying we heard right from the word go. He contacted me right from the word go. He's making contacts through different methods, and he wanted me to go on with him first because he wanted to continue this big release that he had, having the interview with Oak Shannon, and he figured that I should go on with him first. Now he didn't say that. But basically, Oak Shannon comes back and says that unless I release Jay at Unity, I shouldn't release them. So I've made the decision. I'm not going to release the documents. We're going to talk about the documents here. There are a couple of people who have got the documents. And as what happened with the Wilson leak document, that's what happened with the Wilson leak document. I couldn't really put it on myself on the internet, but I decided, well, this is disclosure. So anybody who wants a copy of the document can get a copy of the document. And that's when Chase Williams said, can you send me a copy of the document? And then when he got the document, he said, why didn't you put this on the internet? And I said, because I know everybody in the document. I can't do it. And he said, well, leave it with me. And then a couple of weeks later, he phoned me up from an elevator in Chicago. I remember he was in an, I said, I'm in an elevator in Chicago. I think those documents you just gave me, I think they just went on the internet. And I said, oh, really? And that's how it happened. So this is the same thing. I've given the Wilson leak document to a couple of people. You know who some of these people are. And they've got the document. And if they decide to release it, that's beyond me. It's out there now. But I will not release the documents because I don't agree with this condition that has been placed by Oak Shannon. So fine. He says, don't release him. I won't release the documents until he dies. But anybody else who has the documents, they're free to do with what they want. They have no agreements with Oak Shannon or with me or with Jay or anything else. And so today, what I wanted to do is to discuss with you what's in these documents and why people might want to see them.
I'll remind you, you gifted me some of these for my birthday.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. You've seen it. So you can release them if you want. You're not obliged to Oak Shannon. You didn't make an agreement with them. You didn't make an agreement with Eric Davis. You didn't. We had it under condition that I had given them to you before I got this message from Oak Shannon not to release the notes. And so
I release them, I'll probably call my gal pal Melinda and be like, what do you want to do with these? I think they match something you have. And honestly, I started bugging you and Melinda about this a month ago.
Honestly. Yeah.
We were good. In that month time frame, I've been shopping around. I've been like, who else could possibly have walked off with notes from this? So I have been quietly asking other people if they have notes, and I have been getting some interesting responses over the last few days. So I know people are now maybe checking file cabinets. I'm not sure. Where do old guys keep these things? Do their wives usually know where this stuff is? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, there was 20 guys in the room. And if Jack Houck was taking notes and if Oak Shannon was taking notes, then there was probably 18 other guys. I remember when it first came out, as I recall, I may be wrong, but when I first made the announcement that it was called the Advanced Physics Theoretical Working Group, then John had started to talk about it as that. And he said, well, nobody kept notes. And then I said, well, I've got Oak Shannon's notes. And then he said, well, nobody was supposed to keep notes.
Well, did Eric pull these out of a garbage can, or did he just like walk down the table and like, oh, I'll take these and I'll take
He was friends. That's the whole thing. He was friends with Oak. That's why Wilson went to Oak, because he knew Eric Davis and he was getting background on Eric Davis, whether he could talk to him in confidence. And that's what I said to Oak when the first thing I wrote to Oak was this. I said, Oak, did you ever imagine as a little boy that one day your name would be attached to a document that would actually get read into Congress on the most important scientific discovery of all times. I mean, it's like you're going to be in history. You're going to be like walked with Jesus. People are going to go like, oh, I know who O'Shannon was. He was the guy that gave the release to talk to Eric Davis. I mean, he's famous now, and he's afraid of what the fallout's going to be. But welcome to ufology. I mean, that's part of the game of ufology, is everybody fights and there's all these leaks and stuff like that. And people like it because it's exciting. It's like the idea that God has positive and negative in there, because if you don't have the ups and downs of a movie, people get out after the first 15 minutes and walk away. You need the ups and downs, like a roller coaster. It goes up and down and round. It's got lights and noise and all this kind of stuff. That's what ufology is exciting. That's why people get into it. And they're going to be very excited about this. This is another controversy in ufology.
I love it.
And I've gotten a lot of documents. Destin and I had actually the book was actually done. It's called The Alien Documents. I've got a lot of documents like this. We were going to put them all in a book.
And they keep, these documents keep coming up. Why I was circling back to even the Wilson notes is the alien autopsy documents came out with them as well. Yeah. And so now we're talking Oak documents, Jack documents. I know there's other notes out there. So who else has notes?
Yeah, you even had, like, when Bob McGuire came forward, he said he had the letter that he had seen that Wilson had talked about how frustrated he was he couldn't get to the crash saucer program. So it just keeps continuing as you hear this piece. And usually it's always right. It's always right that these notes actually do exist and this stuff has been written, that people record it and eventually it leaks out. That's the whole idea. You can't. In fact, if you go to Jack Vallée's book, they were talking about this advanced physics theoretical working group. And Jack Vallée just said, book number three, where Jack Vallée says, this proves you can't keep a secret. Because as soon as they did the advanced physics theoretical working group, it leaked to the New York Times and it was all under attack and all this started to leak out.
And that's part of Melinda's notes that Jack made. It says it off to the side. Well, we've already blown this part, or, you know, it's already out.
Yeah. But the interesting, to get into the notes, the interesting things that I noticed, and I I'm sort of like some presidents that don't read stuff. I remember Eisenhower. Here's a funny story about Eisenhower, where they said, don't give Eisenhower a memo that's too long. His lips will get tired reading it. And so I've never read the Wilson leak, as the same as I've never read the Wilson leak document. I've read sections of it, but I've not read the document. I read the first page. That's all I needed to read, was the first page. I said to James Rigney, I said, where the hell did you get this from? I just like, whoa, I did. And I only thought it was two pages. And when he sent it to me and it was 15 pages long, that's when I freaked out. I went, oh no, what am I going to do with this thing? But,
through Melinda, Melinda's even the one who filled in Richard Dolan on kind of who Oak was, the importance of Oak. So have you had conversations with Richard Dolan about Oak Shannon?
Oak Shannon, I guess we need to point out, Oak Shannon was not a major figure. Oak Shannon did have this five-dimensional physics thing that he and his buddy were working on, and he was at Los Alamos. That was how the connection was. John Alexander was at Los Alamos, and so was Oak Shannon. And I guess John Alexander was talking UFOs, and it was like the little group where they talked UFOs, and they all had the clearances. So when John put this meeting together, which took place, we've described it before, it took place in McLean, Virginia, at the McLean Secure Facility. So that's where the meeting notes that I've got took place. And John put the thing together. And the thing that people have to remember is this is 1985. This is like with Nicole, you were like knee high to a grasshopper. You know, you were pretty young at the time. And there you go. And so these notes are, people got to remember, it's not what it is today. So what you'll see, the push on today, you and I were part of this, you know, trying to get this negotiation of this briefing done for the Canadian MP people. You remember that you were involved with me on that. And you remember that they were talking about this threat thing. Oh, it could be a potential threat. Go through the committees, through the defense committees. And the Canadians kept saying, we don't have defense committees. The prime minister controls the money. There is no Senate that controls the money and stuff like that. And nobody would listen. So the threat thing, and what you'll see in these notes, you can read through, there's 26 pages of notes. You can read through these notes. There is no, the word threat is never used, ever. Not once in the whole thing. There's no thing about evil aliens.
No, they might have mentioned how it could possibly be a threat, but that's in Melinda's notes. So it might not be.
Yeah, no, it might. But that, and the other thing is that you don't see anything about reptilians in here. You don't see reptilians, because I maintain, I asked the one guy who does all the drawings of aliens, when did the reptilians first appear? He said, oh, the 1980s. And that's when people started telling reptilian stories, and they went through that whole thing. So what you'll see is that. And the other thing that I noticed in this thing was when they're talking about abductions, like Melinda claims that it talks about a lot of abductions. I only saw one little paragraph where they're talking about abductions. And the one thing they mention in the, I didn't bring the notes thing, where they talk about abductions, where they say, people who are in the craft, that you have to talk to the people inside the craft, and that some people thought they got smaller or the craft got bigger. And I've got a book called the UFO Sky Pilots coming out, where a number of the people who've been inside the craft will say, you go on the outside, it's 30 feet across, you go inside, and it's the size of a basketball stadium on the inside. And the aliens tell them, we can make it as big as we want on the inside. And that's in these notes, 1985, that people that went in thought they were smaller or thought that the craft was bigger inside.
I love that little snippet, because you do encounter that, but not only with UFO cases, we encounter it, you know, somewhat with more on the paranormal side of cases. But I want to back up just a little bit to maybe emphasize the ATP group here. At the same, this was 1985. And I know I was young, but I can work through it because I've been paying attention. At the same time, this group was coming together unofficially, sort of officially. We do have to keep in mind our time frame here. The aviary players were already named, so they're kind of swimming around in our community. And also Jacques Vallée had already had formed the unofficial Invisible College. So we do have these kind of crossovers of people of interest once we get to the Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group. And what I noticed from your set of notes from Oak, and even tying in with Melinda's, is, I mean, there's so many people involved in this that are interested in the psychological side of things, the psyops, and it's kind of obvious when you dig into this the way you have, and Melinda and others. It's almost like they're aware of the psychic connection between people and the craft. They're wanting to explore that avenue or this psychic, you know, communication download that people get. I think that's rather important when you see these sets of notes, because you do see Oak's interest in those areas and other people in this group's interest in psi and consciousness studies. And then you get into these interesting side notes that lead you to believe they are talking about known crash retrievals or technology that has been unshelved and brought out. Who are the Lockheed Martin people on all over both of these notes? I mean, that little interesting segue there into Lockheed is interesting enough. And
yeah, let me look here. Lockheed was Ron Blackburn. Now, Ron Blackburn did an interview. You can actually look it up on with Jerry Pippin.
Yeah.
So Google search Jerry Pippin and Ron Blackburn. He does a real interesting interview on crash saucers. So he was one. Melinda's dealt with him for years.
Melinda, I was going to say, has doubled down with Blackburn. They've sorted through a lot of this. So
he's one. Milt Jansen is the other one, who's mentioned from Lockheed, and Don Eber, E-K-E-U-B-L-E, is the third member of Lockheed that is written down here. And they have McDonnell Douglas, Bob Wood, who I've known for many years, who came out with the new Majestic 12 documents many years ago. They were leaking those documents. And that, there again, where Chris Mellon says nobody was... helping. I mean, they got 3,700 pages of documents. That's, and then people were accusing Richard Doty. And I said, Richard Doty can't produce 3,700 pages of leaked documents. They were getting just piles of documents, and they may not have been really legitimate documents. That indicated that an organization rather than an individual was behind those document leaks. That was in the late 80s, the 90s, and the early 2000s that Bob Wood and his son, Ryan Wood, were working on. So Bob Wood was part of this this club as well. One thing I should mention again on the first page that people may not realize, and this has to do with this recent thing with Donald Trump and releasing documents, where he said, I can make documents declassified by thinking about them. And of course, everybody laughed. And I've worked with presidential documents for 30 years. He can declassify something by saying it. So if you take a look at the incident where Jimmy Carter talked about the stealth fighter when he was running for re-election, that immediately opened up the stealth fighter as being declassified. But once you declassify, you got millions of pages of documents to declassify. All the people below you, there's all these documents, and that's what happened. So when John Podesta went to the White House in 2013, the day after he arrived at the White House, Barack Obama stood up and said, people have always wondered what it's like, what's going on at Area 51. And I didn't know, so I asked Shirley MacLaine. And as soon as he said Area 51, that opened up Area 51 to be declassified. The name declassified, it doesn't mean they declassify all the documents Area 51, but the topic, the name Area 51 can now be used because the president used it. So in that connection here, what happens here is, Donald said you can declassify all the documents. One exception to it is the president cannot declassify nuclear secrets, because nuclear secrets aren't part of the executive order that governs all declassification. It's under the Atomic Energy, and the Congress has a thing in that. So he has to work with Congress to get anything declassified in terms of nuclear secrets. And what you'll see on page one, the opening page of this thing, it's got the people and it's top secret restricted, and it's U.S. Department of Energy. So this was not a government project. It was under the nuclear, and the president would not have access. There's always been a rumored secret that's where they hid the UFO secret, was in the Department of Energy, because the president couldn't get to it. It's what they called born classified. Almost everything in the Department of Energy is born classified. It's classified from the day it happens, and they really don't declassify anything. They don't really go out and say how to build an atomic bomb. It'll always be, it's always classified. So what you got to remember with this, John was with the Los Alamos National Labs, and that was Department of Energy, and that's where this document is. So it's a top secret restricted document in the Department of Energy. That's who ran the program. It was the Department of Energy that ran this UFO working group, or whatever you want to call it. That's where it was being hid.
How many years has it taken to become unhidden? The truth comes out eventually.
Well, that's one thing. That's another thing I can say is that when you look at these notes, John has talked about it quite a bit now, and John's story actually matches with the notes. There's nothing in these notes that actually defy that you can go to John and say, John, you lied about this. John Alexander is telling the truth about what happened at these meetings. And what basically happened is exactly what happened when I got the notes, when I got leaked the notes from the book for President Johnson about the UFO study for the President of the United States, and how they had run it and what the president said and all this kind of stuff. And it always came into the same thing as here. What these guys came to conclusion was, yes, UFOs exist. Yes, there's some sort of cover-up going on. Some people are covering stuff up, and we haven't got a clue what's going on. And that's what they're saying now. That's what the government is saying now. UFOs exist, and we haven't got a clue. And everybody says, oh, no, they got it all figured out. And that may be true, but it's pretty deep and dark, because these guys, if you read these notes, it's exactly what John Alexander said. They couldn't get to it, and nobody was interested. When they tried to get it funded, John Alexander went to the guy who ran Star Wars, and the guy said, are you kidding me? I'm already under attack to get my money. If I were to do this, I would lose my entire budget. And John said nobody would touch the subject. So that's what these notes show. They're trying to figure it out. These top secret guys are trying to figure it out, but they're really not getting very far.
No. And that's why we almost see this like reiteration of the goals they have set for these groups. We hear the goals that you see laid out in your notes and Melinda's notes. You see you see what the Lou crew is talking about now. You know, there's a little bit of how this could be a threat narrative or how it could be utilized. They even talk about different groups needing to come together to push these topics and issues forward. Of course, secrecy was like the number one thing. This has to remain absolute secrecy. Well, they were still operating under this, you know, extreme non-disclosure going on. And we are seeing this public push for it now. And that's where I'm finding interesting nuances. I think like people are even contemplating like Lou's relationship with Hal Putoff at this point and how much influence have they had on each other, you know, and Hal's somebody who could potentially have influenced people throughout these decades, as is John Alexander. And I think they have influenced people continuously. You know, they've never been out of the game, but they haven't been entirely in it either.
Yeah. They've always stayed hidden. I'll tell you a funny story, because when I talk about the Department of Energy and John Alexander's role, I'm not sure it's as elaborate as people think John Alexander's role is, but Dan Smith has told it numerous times, that in 1991, when he got involved, he was doing crop circles, and he talked to Bob Exler, who was one of the guys who actually went after Bobby Rainman, who we'll talk about later. So Bob Exler went after Bobby Rainman, but he told Dan Smith, he said, if you want to know about UFOs, phone this guy. And he gave him the phone number to Ron Pandolfi at the CIA. So this is 1991. Dan Smith knows nothing about anything. He phones up this guy at the CIA, and the guy starts talking to him. And he's talking to him, and he's telling him the story or whatever. And right after that, he tells Dan Smith, Ron Pandolfi says, I'm going to Los Alamos just to talk to the live alien. And Dan Smith is like me. He doesn't care. He puts on the internet. It's like, let's get this thing open. And so he puts on the internet, my friend Ron Pandolfi from the CIA says he's going to Los Alamos to talk to the live alien. And he phones Los Alamos. So Dan Smith gets on the phone. He phones Los Alamos. And he says, I want to talk. My friend Ron Pandolfi's coming. Well, hang on. And John Alexander comes on the phone. And John says, is Ron Pandolfi coming there for a meeting? And he said, yes, he is. And then he hangs up the phone. So Ron had said, oh, he's going to meet the live alien there. And that was the rumored story, was that they were keeping the live alien at Los Alamos. The one at Roswell had been kept at Los Alamos. So when Ron came back, he says to Dan, he says, I don't care what you post, he says, but just don't put my name and CIA in the same sentence. And Dan has told that story so many times. So that's the thing. You see, this Department of Energy is this interesting thing. That's where this is being run out of.
Melinda, actually, when I was speaking with her last night, she told me this crazy story about a conference in San Francisco they were all at. She was chasing John Alexander around, and he finally saw her. And there's this whole moment, because it like establishes that they've known each other and talked over the years, because Melinda bugs people, you know, and yeah. Is relentless. Well, there's this big picture of John, like outstretched arms, like getting ready to hug Melinda. And Lorian Fenton's all shocked in the background, like, what's going on here? Yeah. But that was the meeting where John Alexander finally admitted, or that was the conference where John finally admitted to Melinda that she was right. That, yes, it was a thing. Yes, this, that, you know, and he had kind of denied it or, you know, skirted it with her for years before. But yeah, she finally got that information out of him then. And yeah, that was a hilarious story.
And that goes back to another thing that Ron Pandolfi said, which is absolutely true. Because we cannot control the phenomena, we have to watch those that the phenomena is interacting with.
Yeah.
That's the whole deal. So they're watching people in the UFO community as well as the other way around. And that's where now, you know, you see what's happened with Congress, that a lot of stuff, the scientists are getting involved and doing stuff or whatever. But where is it going? It's going into the black world. It's all classified. We can't even get 144 sightings. We can't even get what the 144 sightings were. And so you get this idea that it's filtering down, but they are watching, absolutely, because where does the CIA get this intelligence? Where does FBI get their intelligence? They get it from people. They it doesn't fall out of the sky. They've got to talk to people in order to get the intelligence.
What do they call that? There's two types of intelligence gathering. There's like the surface intelligence gathering, which, you know, you kind of just see what you pick up or assess the situation. And then there's the type of intelligence gathering where you're embedded in something, you know, so you get more intricate details. I think there's a lot of that going on, whether it's official or not. I mean, almost everybody on that graph or list that Melinda has built and you've built and people have built on, if you look, they all kind of have counterparts, you know, whether it stays the same over the years. There are these avenues that they have on the community. And I'll throw, I mean, Joe Mergia loves to talk about the fact that he talks with Eric Davis. I'm sure they gossip and they talk about stuff. Is that like information gathering and collecting? Maybe, maybe on some level. I mean, these people do keep their ear to the community. I can't say that they're invested and they know the Twitter wars and all that kind of stuff, but they do have their friends in this community, just like Melinda and Jim Semivan over the years. They're friends or friendly enough that they talk.
It's or you just go to the latest rumor, and you've heard the rumor because I asked you about it, that Lou Elizondo is the director of the UAP program inside Space Command.
That's the rumor. Nobody can.
That's a rumor. And if that's true, that's exactly.
You're hearing little twists on maybe like his official title, or maybe they haven't given it an official title yet since it's so new sort of thing. But yeah, you do hear gossip like that. Even Eric Davis, like you pointed out, it was back in the early 2000s. You guys were communicating more. He has communicated with Erica Lukes in the past. So, I mean, these things do happen. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And the other thing I would point out, because the reason I knew these guys back in the early 80s is people don't really realize what NIDS was. I think it was like some secret organization. But basically what it was John or Bob Bigelow bringing in high level hired talent for weekends to talk about UFOs. And he would pick their brains. So it's like you and I, if you could have a conference where you have Kit Green and John Alexander and all these people to come to your little town, and you have a little meeting and they talk for the weekend, you're going to pick up a lot of stuff, and you're basically hiring them. So that was what it was they were interested in the propulsion stuff that the Canadians were doing in the early 1950s, because it helped put off was into propulsion. So they were talking to me about that, and they were also talking to me about the Haldeman Air Force Base film, which they were very interested in. NIDS was trying to get to the bottom of the Haldeman Air Force Base film. Was it really a landing of a UFO at Haldeman Air Force Base? Was it filmed? They were bringing in Paul Chartle to interview him to Las Vegas, and he had a rollover car accident 2 weeks before he was to be interviewed by NIDS. But they were trying to, so they were talking to me because I was friends with Jim or Bob Emenegger, and they were talking to me, what did I know about the Haldeman Air Force Base? What did Bob tell me? Where do I think it was, and all sorts of stuff. And so that's how I got to know these guys, and they are all like trying to pick this stuff up. And that's what Eric was really good at. Most people don't realize that Eric Davis has an intelligence background, and he was intelligence in South Korea even before he became the physicist and stuff. So when he went to aerospace, I put this out and I talked to Chris Bledsoe, and he said they're all in aerospace. It's like in NASA, it's the whole envelope. So they went there, and but everybody's working on trying to get information. So the way it works is the NIDS people are trying to find out, and they come to me, and they go to people, and they gather these people around the Cosmic Club or the Invisible College, because they can get information from these people, because they're trying to figure it out. And that's what Eric Davis was trying to do. He's trying to figure it out for himself, because he's an experiencer. He had the sighting, and he's trying to figure it out. And I knew who he was talking to. I knew the intensity, and he had connections through, a lot of them have connections through the Organization for Former Intelligence Officers. So they will go, Richard Doty will talk about this. So you go to this meeting with these guys and you talk to them and say, hey, we heard about UFOs. Oh yeah. And that's where they get a lot of this material, because they trust each other. It's like the secret handshake. They know who's in the group, and they basically exchange stuff. So a lot of this was used, and it comes down to the idea that you keep it secret. So they really don't like this stuff leaking out, because that was the story that was told to me, was one of the people was asked, can you describe who the 12 guys are who run it? And the guy said, yeah, probably. And then the researcher said, well, why don't you go public with it? He said, because you'd go to the New York Times, they'd publish an article, I would have to deny it, and then nobody would ever talk to me again. That's why nobody talks, because they want to keep secret because they're trying to get the secret themselves.
Well, and honestly, that was the impression I got when Oak asked you to see him before we released him. You know, I thought he just maybe wanted a heads up for like his future question barrage that was going to happen. You know, that's
yeah. It sounded like he didn't even know. He didn't realize his notes were there. I mean, he sort of forgotten about them. He didn't think they were significant. That's the impression I got from him.
Right. Well, and I mean, if they're just his notes and there's no background, there isn't anything interesting.
Yeah. Because I mean, because when he was being interviewed by Jay, he showed him the one page where it had the names and it had me. And then it had all these people and me. Would me be you? And that's when he confirmed, yeah, me, that's probably me. And if he had denied that, it would have made it so much more easy. Then I would have said, okay, he denies his notes. Let's go. Let's put him out.
But that's what I mean. He doesn't strike me as a man that wants to be known as a liar. I mean, I don't.
But the other thing is he doesn't want to be known as the UFO guy. He's got a very Christian background.
He wants to be private.
Yeah, I can see it. He doesn't want the UFO thing, but he did go public and he did give an interview on UFOs. And this is the second part of his story that explains why he knew all these people and what his connection was. And it's got some interesting stuff in this document that you take a look at the concept that they really don't push the evil alien thing and the threat thing. And they're more into the scientific thing. They're trying to figure it out. They do talk about mind control. And that's something, again, you've got to realize this is 1985. I'll quickly show the page. There it is. And that you saw it. Okay. That is a whole page on remote viewing. Now, remote viewing, people think, oh, remote viewing has always been around. Sorry, remote viewing, the term and the whole concept became public in 1995 when Ron Pandolfi supposedly got it back to the CIA. It was in the DIA. They forced the program back to the CIA. They did this study and they killed it. And then supposedly some people said it went black. It went into a deeper thing because the guy was going to write the book. His name escapes me. He's the guy who did the Kennedy assassination stuff. He was a reporter out of Texas. But anyway, he was doing a book in 1993 and 94, and he had gotten a hold of all the remote viewers. He's going to do the book, and the CIA put an injunction on the book, on the publisher, from publishing the book. The book never got published till 2000 on remote viewing. In 1995, they went first. So what they did, instead of getting caught with the remote viewing program and someone says, have you got this program? And they have to say no, and then find out they're lying. They say, well, let's reveal it. So they revealed it and said, oh, we got this remote viewing program and it doesn't work. So the remote viewing program was outed in 1995, but in this thing, Hal Puthoff gives them a briefing and they discuss remote viewing in this 1985 top secret meeting in the SCIF in Virginia.
That's why it's exciting, because I connect that dot based on their tech talk or found tech talk or alien technology inference and this Psi angle. That's where the puzzle pieces come together. And based off what Kit Green has said, you know, in his investigations, the propulsion, they're wanting to know how it pops in and out. You know, that doesn't sound like it's something that blasts, but comes in and out. So that's where people start going, why is consciousness connected to UFOs? And why are all these people talking about consciousness? Well, it's little pieces of the puzzle like this. There's obviously a connection between psi abilities and the maneuverability of these crafts. Were they exploring that in 1985? Well, it looks like they were, or thinking about it, or thinking they should. And I don't know. There's going to be some follow-ups to this, you know, like we had planned to kind of roll this out in three parts and well, four, five, six, seven parts, if you count the interviews you were going to do, and ending it with a panel discussion, or not a panel, even just you and Richard Dolan and Project Unity. But this is why it's strange, because like you said, this gossip, it's already out. They're already out. Like Melinda's versions are out. who I've spoken with, who've wanted to talk to you. I've immediately said, you need to talk to Melinda Leslie. Also talk to Melinda. I know people are questioning both of you now and wanting you both to talk about it. And just in our little broadcast here, people are saying, well, I have these and I've seen them now. Can I share them? Should I not share them? We're not going to share them, but who has them out, do what you will. I have my own set. I will probably release them sometime accordingly. But like I said, with Melinda, to try to make this make more sense. So they'll come out. No, everybody's kind of freaking out of whether or not they should do anything with what they have. So, yeah.
And that's the thing. We didn't get the message till after we had put the link, and then we pulled the link as soon as we got the message about almost like the injunction to stop us from doing it. And that's fine. So we did that, and people have the right to do what they want. And,
you remember my gossip and rumors series that I did, and I talked with like three of you. I'm like, this should be number four. What's the gossip? Oh, number four. This will all turn out to be true.
Yeah. There's one thing that was interesting on the page of the remote viewing that I don't really recall. They talk about this frequency. I think I contacted Jimmy and sent him the little segments that talked about this. They talk about a 150,000 Gauss magnetic field that seems to be associated with sightings. That's under the remote viewing section. And on another section, they talk about the 3 gigahertz and the 10 megahertz frequencies. Yes. So you can see that these guys have some stuff, and they were throwing this stuff out, and they must have got it from some sort of sensors they were getting. And that's the sort of evidence people are looking for, is this recordable evidence in terms of documenting that these are real objects.
Yeah, there. If I'm remembering, there is a section where they talk about sensor data or placing sensors so they can collect data from certain areas.
Yeah, but their sensor data was very, very simple. I mean, they had, cameras and, stuff like that, and magnetometers and contact points, case preparation. Let me see if I can find that right away. The plan. And they had the plan. Did you see the plan? The government plan? Yeah. I found it kind of interesting because they had prepare the case, because you remember they're going for funding. So prepare the case, get authority, gather data. And so they were going, and it says,
That's the part that sounds like this current disclosure initiative to me.
Yeah. They're trying to get somebody. Points.
Yeah.
So they have the word Keyworth. Now Keyworth was the science advisor to Ronald Reagan. And it says, no, it has Admiral Poindexter. No, the president. No, vice president. No, Dr. Cooper. No, Don Kerr. His name comes up, K-E-R-R, comes up quite a bit. Who was he? Let me see. He was on the first page. If you see, they had him as E.T., Influence and Money. Mm-hmm. Don Kerr, and he was, I think he's still alive. He's now the director of news and intelligence for the National Geographic Intelligence Agency. And I think I heard that in connection with, Melinda may know, that is connection with Tom DeLonge. I heard that. Kerr was the key guy. And then they have Dick. ACSI, which was Army, U.S. Army and Technical Intelligence. So they have all these things where they're trying to go to these different people. And they're talking about the, I guess it's the funding money. You can see the plan. They've sort of got an organizational flow chart here, and they have gathered data, hardware, research and development hardware. That's where you're talking about the sensors and stuff. So gather data, research and development hardware, and then contact. So they were actually talking about trying to make contact, this idea of dealing with contactees. And if you go back to Bob Wood, that was one of the other ones I got. Bob Wood, who is a member of this committee, I got in trouble many years ago because I put his documents out. So what happened there was I got these documents, and they're on a site. If people want to go and see them, there's 250 pages of documents, and it's called Check the Evidence. Just put Check the Evidence UK, and you'll get this site. There's 250 pages. So what happened was they did the same thing. And what happened is in 1968, James McDonald from James Douglas from Douglas Aircraft wanted to figure out, are UFOs real? And he and Bob Wood was working on it as well. So the president said, I'll give you $500,000. See if you can get to the bottom of this UFO thing. So they set up a UFO search thing, the same as this, exactly identical. 1967, Stanton Friedman was actually hired. He tells the story, they hired me, I'm driving across the country, and as I'm driving across the country, they shut the program down. So he ended up in California. That's how he ended up in California. And anyway, so they did this thing, and they did the same thing. They were interviewing abductees. They were regressing abductees to find out how, did they tell you how the UFO flew? Did they show you the power supply? All this kind of stuff. So what happened was they had this person who was doing regressions, and everybody had their set of notes, the same as here. Everybody would have had their set of notes that they took at the UFO working group, took them home, did it wherever they want. So this guy took them home and he put them in the barn, and then he dies. So the regressionist guy dies. And then the guy that comes along and buys the farm is going, one day he's going through and he finds this set of documents on UFOs in the barn. And he goes, oh, I'll sell these. These are worth piles of money. He puts them on eBay and the guy buys them for $29 on eBay. So then he comes to me and he says, he gave his name was Ralph or something. He wouldn't give me his last name. And I go, oh yeah, he's just trying to set me up. He's trying to set me up with these documents. And as soon as I make them public, he's going to tell me I'm crazy, whatever. And then finally he gave me his name. And I go, wow, this is cool. So I got in contact with the guy, his name is escaping me, who runs Check the Evidence in Great Britain. And I said, can you post these documents? Because he was a techie guy. Can you post these documents on your site? He said, sure. So they made the connection and they put them in PDFs and they posted these 250 pages of documents from this UFO investigation that was run in the 1960s by Douglas Aircraft. And they, and the front, it's got Douglas. And Bob Wood was furious when he heard these documents had gone, and he went, came to me and he said, how do you get hold of these documents? You know, he was really upset. And I said, oh, you're the guy who was doing the regressions. He died. They were in in the shed, and the guy found the documents. He sold them on eBay. And he said, oh, he did. I said, yeah. So that was, these documents will float out from time to time that people will die and someone finds the documents and puts them out.
I keep them in my vault, and he really needs his barn. Like, excellent storage facility to keep documents safe.
And then you get Bob Wood on this 80-85 committee. And that's what people always talk about with the Avery. These guys know each other. Yeah. They're all friends. If you've been on the email list with Jack Sarfati, you know what it's like. All these guys are on the email list and they have their own email list where they're exchanging stuff and they know each other. So Bob Wood knows everybody on the committee and they're exchanging information. So they get into a vault and then they're able to tell top secret stuff. What do you know? What were you told? And they're trying to put this material together to get a committee to get funding from the U.S. government to get money. And the whole thing, just basically, they couldn't get any money and the whole thing was shut down.
Let's talk money for a second, because how much did you just say they got to explore?
Douglas Aircraft was half a million dollars.
Well,
that was $68
to the money that Reed got to look in. You know, we're not talking ATIP. Yeah, ATIP, I guess.
With OSAP. Yeah, well, basically OSAP.
Because, like you said, these people never leave. Some players might get added. Some might move on to something else, or there's a reiteration of this push. So we're talking advanced theoretical working group, which sort of advances to Bass, Bigelow, yeah, NIDS, and then on to OSAP, ATIP, UAPTF, ARO, AARO kind of right now. Yeah. So there are elements of people still involved in this, even though it didn't get officially sanctioned. I've even heard Alexander had something formed in 2017 before the New York Times broke, and that got that funding reshuffled back towards UAPTF. So there are things like that. It goes back to the very beginning of even Project Blue Book being sign and grudge before. I mean, these things continue and change names. If people find out the name and they want it hushed, then they close the group, but the group's really there and they just get placed under a new name. So these things happen. I even question now, like, if Galileo Project
is
reiteration of this, like, in 20 years, are they going to be on that chart? And we're going to check them off. Like, yep, Avi Loeb was looped in with this, 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 and this. He's a level.
Or you take a look at, or you take a look at Avi Loeb's list of people working for him, and it's the Avery on his, they're all, because that's what they do. And it makes sense that if you're a guy who's trying to figure this thing out for yourself to get patents or whatever interest or whatever it is, what you do is you follow the money or the information. So when Bob Bigelow comes forward with a pile of money, they, hey, Bob Bigelow's doing UFOs, let's go. And they all go over there because there's money. Or Joe Firmage had a pile of money. He had a pile of money. They all went to Joe Firmage.
And I'm on a whiteboard over here on my wall. Like, here, I'll flash that. Like, you do have to write this timeline out so you can kind of see where people fall in and fall out. And
yeah, that's what Melinda did. Melinda's done lectures on that where she has a, like a flow chart. She shows like
brilliant.
Where,
I know
where the Avery people are and their connections to all these things. Now she's got to add the group of, on the end, the column, she has to add the column for Avi Loeb's group. And I'll guarantee you, I know Kit Green's on it. Melon and all these guys, but they're newcomers, but they're on it.
Yeah. Melinda's list, which I have my own, which is people talk about me keeping notebooks and lists, but Melinda's and what you contributed to Melinda's, what she's put out publicly is probably 7 or 8 years old now. You know what I mean? So there, I know there's pieces that I've added onto it that other people have added onto it, names, groups, you know, but when you're in the moment of it and tracking it down, you know, you don't release these things because you don't know all the players yet. You don't know the ins and the outs, but we will eventually. Like,
and this does name a number of new players that we didn't know, like this Kerr guy, who's now with the Geospatial Intelligence. And they have, who's these other guys they had on there that I, some of these names I'd never heard of before. And when you saw the interview with Jay, with Oak said he knew all the people. But you have, this K E U B L E guy seems pretty big that they were, using him. And, the CENTCOM director, they had a bunch of these people who, some of them are still around, but that's where you learn about these Avery groups is you find groups like this, and then you start checking who these people are, and you realize, oh, they're part of another, they did another thing on UFOs or whatever. Even the idea that Oak Shannon was doing the thing on the 5D universe with the UFOs coming in through 5D. I didn't know he was doing that. And you start to realize, oh, that's maybe why John Alexander picked them. Because he was talking about this 5G thing for the universe and said, come to this meeting, we're going to talk about this. But I don't see Oak Shannon making any presentation in these notes. I see a lot of people making presentations, but not Oak Shannon.
Right. Well, and honestly, not to compare it directly to Galileo, but you hear about so many people being involved. And you also hear that they're supposed to be attending these, I'm going to say monthly, might not be monthly meetings, it might be quarterly. But then you also hear that if people don't attend, they're supposed to be kind of kicked out of the Galileo Club, but that's not happening. So it almost makes me wonder, like with the ATP group, you know, were some people involved like heavily for a few months and then others didn't attend as much? I want to throw in, and not to add controversy to anything, but this was the same time frame that Richard Doty was working for Hal Puthoff, right?
I think his was later. He was
1985. Like,
well, that's when he was working as an intelligence officer. He didn't. Hal Puthoff, I think, was the 2001 or something. He was in 95 to 2004 or something. But he was, that was a big thing because there is actually mentioned in here. Where is it?
I'm bringing this up just. In reference to maybe how Doty has commented about how he wasn't officially part of any of these groups, but he was almost kind of sent as a representative or, you know, to see what was going on for maybe a specific meeting, but not single one. So I do think there are players like that at hand, you know.
Well, they would have, the way I think it works is they would have somebody in the meeting that goes back to whatever UFO group they're working for. And this is what they're talking about. All you need is one guy. You don't need them all. But his document is actually talked about here. If you see, one of the things they talked about is Kirkland Air Force Base, August the 8th, 1980, 23050. And it has report, many mistakes in report, don't take too seriously. I'm pretty sure that's the report that Richard Doty put out. And we're talking about a Project Aquarius and all this kind of stuff. And his case is talked about. He's not mentioned in here, but I'm sure there was somebody. Well, in fact, there is somebody in Air Force intelligence. I'm pretty sure if you look at the list of names of where they're all from. And that's what John was trying to do, is get them from across all the different agencies to find out who has what, almost like they're doing right now. Everybody report, where are your documents? How many crashes you did? And they're trying to get everybody to put it in one place. And everybody's hoarding the material. And it's like, no, I've got the craft. You're not going to get my craft. And it's this inner rivalry between different agencies, because it's all about funding. If I give you my craft, well, then I lose all the funding that comes with it.
That's why they have to like source their parts out from other places. I mean, like, so the Army obviously didn't have parts that they've pulled out from anywhere that any other government source had given them. They bought Linda's, who had hers in some weird, crazy, elaborate vault in California somewhere, right? Yeah. And then you hear about these pieces that are just like randomly in Ohio and need to be driven to Texas or wherever. And like, yeah,
I'll read the names.
Stanton's archive. So it's like there's these pieces all over the place that aren't even protected, but I don't know. It's just,
well, let me do Stanton's archives. I'll forget if I don't do it right now. One of the things they discuss in here is the Cuban shoot down story. And for people who don't know, that was 1967. There was a UFO coming in over Cuba. They scrambled two jets, and U.S. Navy intelligence in Florida picked up the signal. And the wingman in behind was following it. And he was describing what's going on. And then he said, he's locked on. Like, they lock on to shoot it down. They said, take it down. And the front guy locks on, and his plane just disintegrates in midair. And the guy's screaming, he's gone, he's gone, the plane's gone. And U.S. intelligence picking this up. So of course, that leaks out. And Stanton gets that. And he takes Bob Pratt, who was then with the National Enquirer, who could pay anything. The National Enquirer had piles of money. He filed an FOIA. They said, no, we don't know anything about this. Then there was people with a secrecy, UFO secrecy group, who said to NSA, you give us the file or we're going to go to the Cubans. And that day, two FBI guys showed up at the guy's door, scared the living daylights out of him. So, of course, when I went to Stanton's files, guess what the first thing I was looking for? The Cuban story. I knew. I said, you got a file on the Cuban? And sure enough, the whole file on the Cuban incident, who leaked the story to Stanton Friedman, what he told him, all this sort of stuff. And then I was waiting for the audio archives, because Stan taped a lot of his phone calls, to see if there's a phone call with this whole thing. So you get that. But let me read the names of the people who are on the committee that are listed in this one section. This is the section that was shown to Oak Shannon the other day during the interview. So the attendees, and he's got me, and that's Oak Shannon. He confirmed that. Yeah, me would probably be me. Los Alamos National Labs, Bill Wilkinson from CIA, Hal McConnell from the NSA. And Hal McConnell, this New York Times stated that the NSA guy had leaked the story. That's where he was getting it. So it may have been Hal McConnell who leaked the story to the NSA, that they had this UFO working group trying to figure out about UFOs, because the New York Times did it and they did a book on it. Bert Stubblebein from BDM, Hal Putoff, Jack Houck, he was from one of the airspace places, or no, maybe he was even from Lockheed. He may have been from Lockheed. When you're going to do Melinda tomorrow? So we'll talk to Melinda about who Jack worked for.
In an hour.
Yeah, Ed Speakman from INSCOM, Bill Sauter from McDonnell Douglas, an unnamed guy from BDM. They don't have his name. Jack Stewart from USDRE, Ralph Freeman, ? As to where he was from. Bob Wood, we mentioned before, from McDonnell Douglas. And then the Lockheed guys, Ron Blackburn. And I repeat to people, if you want to see a good interview, Google search Ron Blackburn and Jerry Pippin. It's only a 15-minute interview. It's pretty inspiring interview. Milt Jansen, and then Don, Keuble, And so they had those, and those were the main people that they brought in from all over the place. And then there was a couple of people who made presentations and stuff, and a lot of people claimed to have been at the meeting, but we don't see their names there. I think there was about 20 people out there, and they had to have a top secret SCI clearance to get in. You couldn't have just a top secret. You had to have the special compartmented information.
That's in Melinda's notes as well, like as a ticker off to the side. It's like people already with clearances, you know, it's like circled.
Yeah. One thing I noticed here, you get after 1985, you get a lot of stuff on the UFOs. You'll hear Lou Elizondo talk about it and Mel and stuff about the nuclear weapons, that they're shutting down nuclear weapons. And there was actually the National Enquirer got it. It was Bob Pratt got it. And that was a document that was leaked in 1976 that talked about the nuclear weapons being intruded on at Loring Air Force Base, Wordsworth, Minot, Malmstrom along the Canadian border. But in here, there's no discussion of nuclear weapons, but there is them shutting down gun systems. Now, I don't know what that is. There's a mention of them shutting down gun systems, but there's no mention of them shutting down nuclear weapons. And they talk about this
Robert Hastings hasn't done his work yet.
Yeah, they knew about cases, like, for example, this is they have Zimbabwe.
Yeah,
it couldn't have been the aerial school because that was later. That was 94. This is 85. But they talk about Zimbabwe, about some sightings in Zimbabwe.
There was couple locations that they gave. There was a South American location, like they had looked at
Zimbabwe. And Mount Hayes in Alaska, and the Perdido in Spain. And I think these were rumored places where they had UFO bases. So these were discussed in here, but they don't really say. It's just a note that said that has the names, but it really doesn't say what they discussed about it.
Weren't sure if it was in reference to known ET bases, or if this was reference to bases that were maybe housing tech or somehow involved with crash retrievals or where the stuff was placed is kind of how I got the gist of it.
Yeah.
So,
and they did have Ed Dames, who was giving a lecture there, I guess, who was giving them a briefing. They brought him in, and that may have been under his section. So he may have been just throwing rumors that he heard, because Ed Dames had all sorts of weird stories that he was putting out.
These briefings sound like the Canadian Education Initiative that we were getting little 5-minute briefings on for that project. Yeah.
But that would be a need to know, that if they brought in Ed Dames, he didn't need to know what they were doing. They just heard that he had something, come in, give your briefing and leave, and you don't know what's being discussed. You just, or almost like a grand jury where you go in and give your testimony, but you don't really know who they're looking at and who they're going to charge and stuff like that. And so that's what happened here. But the one thing we should talk about, because we may want to shut it down, so because tomorrow's will be a longer one with Melinda, is the big one that I put on the internet that everybody got excited about, the
Bobby
one page.
Is that what
Bobby
you
Rainman? Yep. Yeah. And I asked Oak about that, and he didn't answer it. But all they have is back engineering. I think it's back engineering. And it's so what you see in the notes, it seems to appear like they're doing topics. So in the morning, we're going to talk about, they talked about cattle mutilations. So they talk about cattle mutilations. Then in the afternoon, they talk about Rendlesham Forest was one of the things they talked about. They were trying to get good cases because they realized that the Blue Book had been shut down. And what they were saying is, we have to talk about the unexplained Blue Book cases. We got to find new cases, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to sell the investigation angle of the whole thing. And so, now I forgot what I was talking about. Oh, the Bobby Rainman thing.
Right.
So they have back engineering, and all they have is the one thing on there, Bobby Rainman. And in 88, I think it was when Bob Exler went with his business card to this meeting where Bob McGuire came from, the Institute for Defense Analysis. That's the building they were in where Bob used to work, and they had a conference there, and that's where Bobby Rainman was talking. Mm-hmm. And he went in and he gave his business card, and he said, I'd like to get in contact with MJ-12, and that's where this whole deal with MJ-12 came. And he was asking about it, but it ties into the idea that the rumor must have been out there that Bobby Rainman was running the show.
Well, and that's, we're 85 here.
Yeah.
And I'm pulling up some of my notes that I have now. From 1977 to 1981, he was the head of the most sophisticated electronics and data analysis organization, the National Security Agency.
Yeah.
He also spent 18 months as deputy director of the CIA.
Yeah.
Which I duly noted this part concerning Inneman, because unrelated to UFOs, sort of, is during this crossover time of him being the head of both of these departments, he was kind of reorganizing information and how information got through to certain peoples or areas or branches of the government better. And if you read how this plays out, which he has quite a few biographies that you can search and look up information on Bobby Ray, but this was kind of a loophole moment because he was able to pretty much write himself a memo as the head of one to the other, and he was able to approve his own memos of what he wanted to change and set up and organize.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a very interesting moment. But then he does get a little shady in his character too. Like, he was brought up, nominated by Clinton, I believe, to become a cabinet member, but then he asked to be withdrew. And there was speculation about that because he may have been involved with some sort of unsanctioned deals. You know, he wasn't ever charged or brought to light on any of it, but it would have looked bad at him for the time. Other people's were. And it was something to do with they sold parts to South African entities that maybe they shouldn't have, you know, and this kind of leaks out later. But then there's these also nuances of after he leaves his government position and why so many people think he's such a big deal. And he was approaching like aerospace and all these interesting like segues of how we could push like technology and telecommunications. And there was something to do with like cryptography at the time, if I'm remembering, like basic messages weren't encrypted, like encrypted technology was just ours. It was sort of a secret. And now, you know, it was like fighting the tides, you know, everything's encrypted now. So that bits sort of came out. But yeah, I mean,
well, the other thing,
the other thing
about Bobby Ray Inman,
this man was promoted, I think, to 4-star by the time he was 49. Which is just extremely fast. Like, he's had a doozy of a career.
Yeah. Well, the other rumor was with Clinton that he was gay, that was going to be outed there. But he went to SAIC, which I think is the biggest key to Bobby Ray Inman. Because if you read Stephen Greer's stuff, he maintains SAIC was one of the main players in the UFO game, and Bobby Ray Inman was there. So when you hear him talking to Bob Exler, he says, "I haven't been in that field for quite a while. I really don't know what's going on. Like, he's lost his clearances. He really doesn't know." And that's exactly what Walker said when he was asked about UFOs. He said, I haven't worked on that for many years. I can't really talk to you about it because I've worked on it." But Bobby Ray Inman had this, and so you see the Stephen Greer connection. And Stephen Greer told a lot of stories, which started with this whole story about briefing Admiral Wilson. That was where it started, with Stephen Greer. But Stephen Greer said that he had told Senator Goldwater to get to the bottom of this thing, that he had been head of intelligence in the Senate. And Goldwater says, "Well, who's running it?" And he said, "Bobby Ray Inman." He said, "Oh, well, he's my friend. I'll phone him up." And then he said, "Okay." And then everybody said, "Oh, BS. Greer made up another story." But I have this another set of documents I have that I've never released. I have the entire collection of Goldwater UFOs, the whole thing. I was at the archives, I got them all. 190 pages, he used to talk to people about UFOs. And I recovered the letter where he talks to Greer He talks about talking to Bobby Ray Inman, confirms, and Greer actually got the document put on his website. He said, oh, look, this confirms my story, and backed up. He was all happy because I found this document, and never really credited me with finding the document, but he put it on his website. But the thing, the story that was told with that was that he talked to, after Goldwater died, he talked to the daughter, and she said, oh, I remember when he phoned Bobby Ray Inman. She said, my dad phoned him. And she said, I never heard my dad, I've never seen my dad so upset after that phone call. And he said he never talked about UFOs again after he talked to Bobby Ray Inman. So there's a Bobby Ray Inman story. And that's a key on this, in this document. They talk about it. Now, whether they discussed the rumor and whether they all talked about what they knew about this rumor or whatever, but that's one of the key pages. It's a 188x14 page, and it's all it has is this Bobby Ray Inman on the page.
Am I correct? Is he's still alive?
Yeah.
Like 92, maybe?
Yeah, he's still alive. Yep. And so that's, he's an interesting character, but he's like in the background with all these guys. That even Walker, we had the idea that Walker had gone to the Kecksburg crash, that he said I was involved for a couple of days and that's it. And so he was 100 miles away from the Kecksburg crash. And then when we asked him whether he'd been to Kecksburg, he said, yeah, I was there. So what do you want to know? And he confirmed that we had guessed this, that he had been there for a couple of days. So he gets called in and gets the clearance. He goes in, he helps recover this UFO, and then he goes back to being president of Penn State University and pretends nothing ever happened. So you can have a clearance for a couple of days, a couple of months. It's not that you, once you're in the UFO program, you stay in and they tell you everything that's going on. It's need to know. So you get brought in on a program, you do your job, and then you go back where you came from.
And just hang out there. Because you never get kicked out, even if they say you're kicked out. Like,
yeah. Or if you
get around in a couple of years, you know, or you'll be part of the email chain or whatever.
And the other thing comes down to, at this level, these guys are top secret SCI, so they can sort of trust each other and they know what level everybody's at, that they have the appropriate clearances. Because if you don't, then you have this situation where Eric Walker, if you remember the story where Dr. Eric Walker at Penn State, who knew everything, when the story got out that we were investigating him, Kit Green was sent in by Bill Moore to talk to him, and he got a clearance from the CIA to go talk to Eric Walker. And Eric Walker said to him, they talked about the Glomar Explorer, the CIA, where they recovered this Hughes aircraft thing. They recovered the Russian submarine. It was all top secret. They talked about that. They were both involved, and they talked for half an hour. And after half an hour, Kit Green brings up UFOs, and Walker says to him, give me two reasons why I should tell you what's going on. And then Kid Green says, apparently I didn't tell him the right answers. And he tells what answers it was. He said, apparently I didn't tell him the right answers, because basically he just threw him out. He said, I don't have to tell you anything. You're not the president. I don't have to tell you anything. You bring me a letter from the president saying I can talk to you and I'll talk to you, but I'm going to talk to the president and make sure he signed the letter. So Kit Green got basically thrown out of the office. And so it comes down to this thing about, you got to be careful who you talk to, what level you're at in terms of intelligence.
Well, and I'm thinking of Dick D'Amato at this point too. That's what he was tasked with pushing through, and he was coming up against these brick walls.
Yeah. And that's when he said, I'm just here. That's when he showed the book Majestic to Jesse Marcel Jr. said, I want to tell you something. Yeah. Jesse said, oh, I've told my whole story. He said, no, I want to tell you something. And they go into this, again, a secure room, a secure room with the padlocks on it, all this stuff. And they go in there and he points at the Majestic book and he said, I just want to tell you, this is real. And then Jesse Marcel Jr. says, yeah, I know it's real. When are you going to tell the people? And he said, if it were up to me, I would have done it yesterday. It's not up to me. I'm just here to find out how much the security is costing. Need to know. He went in, he went into Area 51. He talked to everybody, George Knapp, Bob Lazar. He talked to everybody to try to find out, is this Area 51 story correct? Because what happened there is the Senate Appropriations Committee. And that's where Lou Elizondo and these guys, we couldn't get across the idea. We don't have committees like the Senate Appropriations Committee that spends the money. The money is spent by the Prime Minister of the country. He runs the whole show. And the Senate Appropriations Committee, the story I heard was that Senator Byrd was on the committee. And he said to the guys on the committee, he said, are we investigating UFOs at Area 51? And they all went, well, I don't know. And he said, well, If we're investigating UFOs at Area 51, we're paying for the damn thing. We're going to find out what's going on. And that's why they sent Dick D'Amato to Area 51 to find out what's going on. But when Dick D'Amato came back, he told Jesse Marcel, I'm not here to release it. If it were up to me, I would do it. I'm just here to tell everybody, to tell the Senate Appropriations Committee how much it's costing for the security for the program. And he's really upset. He said there's a group that's not aligned with the government that has unlimited powers and they've got the money and stuff like that. And they basically, get away with it. And there's another thing that's in this document that relates to that. If you hear a recent interview, it was done by Lou Elizondo. He's asked about this thing about why it wasn't released. He said, and he's always hypothetical. I said, well, perhaps there's a hypothetical chance that one company, a private company, was given a piece of metal and they developed something from that piece of metal and they become a billion-dollar corporation. And the other company wasn't given the piece of metal and they went bankrupt. Well, that would be a problem. And so he's hypothetically saying that, and that's what you see here. You see Lockheed Skunk Works and McDonnell Douglas on that thing, but there may have been other contractors who were ignored. So the material is being given to Lockheed Skunk Works and they have an advantage by being given government money to develop programs, whereas other companies don't have the material and they go bankrupt, which would lead to huge lawsuits if they release this and these companies find out that Lockheed Skunk Works was given a bunch of material to back engineer.
Mm-hmm. To add to the speculation on this a little bit, people also talk about Bigelow in this fashion, that he gets these contracts because he's hooked up, and things like that. So,
yeah, well, that would make sense. That's how it works. Yeah, you get the connections. That's why people used to complain to me about Hillary Clinton. Oh, Hillary Clinton doesn't answer emails. Why did she talk to us? I said, let me guarantee you, I think at the top that was for a dinner. The top dinner thing was $36,500 you could donate. I said, I will guarantee you, if you pay $36,000 for one of Hillary Clinton's donation things to one of her dinners when she's campaigning, she will answer your question. I guarantee you. But that's how it works. I mean, why would she, it's whoever is funding you. That's why I say the thing comes down to who have you got in your pocket. So that's why I say the F-35 jet fighter, which is worth millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, and Trump said was totally a ripoff and was over budget and stuff like that. When you take a look at it, it's made in 45 different states. Why is it made in 45 different states? Because there's 90 senators who aren't going to vote against it if it's suddenly there's a 100% cost overrun because they've got people involved. And that's what Eisenhower warned. The original speech, because I was at the Eisenhower Library a couple times, the original speech said, beware the military-industrial congressional complex. Yeah. And that was, he was warning about, once you get everybody involved in the loop and everybody's making money, you can't shut it down. So once you get Congress involved and you get senators who are getting donations from UFO companies and from, to put jobs in your district, and you're getting fundraising from all these different entities, then you can't let go. You're going to vote for it, and it becomes a vicious circle that you can't stop. How do you overrun that thing when everybody's making money on the thing? It just goes round and around, and the budget, they say, we need more money. The budget keeps going, and I call it the national insecurity budget, and it goes up, and it's every year it goes up more in the United States. The budget of the national insecurity budget goes up more in the United States than the Canadian entire defense budget. I mean, ours is not even as big as yours is going up. It's just massive. And everybody's got it. And there's millions of dollars, being flowing around in stocks and all this kind of stuff. And you're going to disrupt that if you suddenly say, oh, we did this thing and we gave these people pieces and all that kind of stuff. There's so many things. And when I heard Lou said that, he was a hypothetical. And I'm thinking, wow, this could be true. This may be something they're trying to figure out, where they give immunity, where they can sort of wipe this out, where these guys get to walk, scot-free. They get pardoned by Biden or whatever for doing what they did.
Immunity kind of passed, didn't it?
That's the rumor. I haven't seen it officially, but that's the rumor. And that's where I say it's game over. All you need, because I knew Eric Davis. Eric Davis gave me these documents. I knew Eric Davis. I knew who he was talking to. He was talking to people a lot higher than the admiral, the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was very connected. He was very aggressive in his research, and he knew what was going on, and he had almost like a photographic memory. And I guarantee you, if you put up a thing and you put people like Admiral Wilson up there, Eric Davis, Hal Putoff, Nolan, people like that, or even Will Miller. Will Miller was the guy who briefed the Joint Chiefs of Staff where Wilson thing took place. And what you'll remember at the end is when he left, Wilson's assistant said to him, "Hey, you know that MJ-12 thing you guys are talking about? Yeah, we're aware of them. We just don't have a need to know what they're doing." And Will Miller, there's an interview with Stephen Greer where Will Miller, people have all these doubts about what happened. Will Miller has an interview with Stephen Greer. He tells the whole story of the briefing. He tells about Wilson going out and trying to get this stuff and being blocked and that sort of stuff. And he was the advisor. So you get Will Miller in front of one of these congressional hearings. It's game, set, match. It's over. They've got already, that's what I've heard, is they're using the Wilson leak document as a, there's been briefings given to various officials or senators and members of the House on who these people are, bringing them up to speed of who these people are in the briefing. And the rumor I hear is that they're using the Wilson leak notes to go after to build a case. And all those people, you get all those people testifying, and it's going to be an exciting day for ufology.
Will it be in closed hearings though, or in public ones? That's the other
thing. That's the thing. It'll be in closed hearings. There'll be some leaks coming out, but that's the big problem that I see, mm-hmm. is that you've seen nothing yet. Nothing has come. It's all gets sucked up into the black world. And the way they work it is their mentality is, we get it first. We develop our weapons and all this sort of stuff, mind control or whatever, and then we send it down. And that's, they'll use the example of GPS. GPS was developed by the military. Now look at, you guys are all using it. So we gave it to you when we were finished with it. And that's how it develops. And that's how it started in World War II. That's why they started the classification thing, the top secret, the restricted, all sort of stuff. And that was because in World War II, the Americans developed 200 different weapons. Proximity fuse, nylon stockings, plastic explosives, jet engines, all this stuff was developed during the war.
Back to Inman for a second. After he left or retired, that seemed like why he was such a hot potato. It's like he kind of knew about these technologies that could be coming out, or what would be worth investing into, or what was going to emerge publicly. Sounded like he was the belle of the ball right after that.
Yeah, Inman's a pretty, but I don't know what he said to Goldwater. I mean, the fact that she had never seen her father that upset, and that he never talked about UFOs again. You wonder what Bobby Inman told him, because I mean, here was a guy who was a former head of intelligence for the Senate, and you know, ran for president and this sort of stuff, and very interested in UFOs. But I didn't find anything in the records. I found, you know, him talking to people, and he told a famous story about talking to General LeMay at Foreign Technology, where he said to LeMay, "Do you have this blue room that's got alien technology in it?" And he said, "You know, you leave, you never ask that question again, or I'll court-martial you." And that's what LeMay told him, just get out of here. And he said he would tell that story over and over. People would ask him about UFOs, and he would tell this story about LeMay, what LeMay told him about the court-martialing and stuff like that. And he said, "I've been trying to get to the bottom of it, but I was never able to." And that's what the word top secret, if you see the most, I think the biggest selling UFO book of all times was Tim Good's Above Top Secret. And that came from a letter that Barry Goldwater, he said, "All this stuff has become above top secret, I can't get to it." And that's where the book came from, the idea above top secret. And then you have people, well, it's not really that, they're trying to describe it, but that's in a Goldwater letter. That's where the actual term above top secret comes from.
And yeah, and then there was the group that was called Above Top Secret, and then it got cancel cultured and taken down. And it's like that. And what's the other one? The Estimate of the Situation. People always quote that, but they really don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Little silly things. But I wanted to ask, because we do have about 213 people watching us live right now. Wow. So I didn't know if we wanted to maybe take any.
Sure. Let's take some questions. They spent time. Let's take their questions.
I want you to reiterate, you mentioned a 15-minute video that we could look up that had, what's his name in it? Blackburn. And you said another name. And I keep thinking Scottie Pippen, but that's not what
you said. No, Jerry Pippen. Jerry Pippen was, he was the guy who first interviewed me after I did the consciousness thing. And he said, "Grant, I can't believe you've done this. You were the president guy. You were the guy with the presidents and the UFO files. I can't believe you've done this. You've gone over to the woo-woo side." And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, Jerry, I didn't go there. I was kind of teleported there. I didn't choose to go there. But he was an interesting guy. He had one leg, and he had lots of, and he did an interview with me. He was a couple days before he died. He was in bed. He was dying of cancer. He did it on a cell phone with me in the hospital bed just before he died. He was an incredible, interesting guy. But he does this interview with Blackburn. Somebody be able to go find it there. It is one of the most incredible interviews. And he actually says, "Oh, so you're sort of telling us this, Jerry's that?" And Jerry sort of laughs. He basically tells him a lot of stuff. It's incredible. And they're talking about crash saucers.
Talk about working right until the end.
Yeah.
I'll interview on my deathbed too, Grant.
There you go.
I'll reach out to somebody.
And we can talk to Melinda, because Melinda's had a lot of conversations with Blackburn. She knows who he is, and she's had a lot. He's been sort of open with her on a couple times. A couple times he sort of told her to back off or whatever, but he's an interesting guy. He's a very powerful, interesting guy.
Okay, here's a question for Grant from our buddy Tom that says, "Have you ever heard of a person by the name of Scott Dorman?" You know, our friend Tom digs into MJ-12.
Yeah. No, the name is ringing a bell, but no.
That means to be continued, Tom.
There you go. We can get him on, and he can tell us who this guy is, and we can talk about it. The name is familiar, but.
Yep. Oh, hi, UFO Joe. You're in the chat too. It's like our whole entire old disclosure panels are in the chat room. Oh, this is good. Maybe we should do another panel, guys. Maybe
from the Las Vegas Knights hockey team, the film guy. Go Jets. Go Winnipeg Jets. Tell them, go Winnipeg Jets.
That's what my cup says here. I had this made for you, but it's terrible. It's supposed to get cold, and this stuff stands out, and it says UFO boss on one side. And
oh
then
my goodness.
There's Toronto maple leaves on
there. Oh no. Oh no.
But I added UFOs to it.
There you go. There you go. Because the Toronto Maple Leafs, that's what we say in Winnipeg. We're the city that where even people in Canada want to visit. And to us, when it comes down to hockey, we don't have to win the Stanley Cup. We just got to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's it. We won the Stanley Cup. We don't, just as long as Toronto loses, we're happy.
It's like your Cup fans. That's what I say. We don't have to win it all as long as we beat the Cardinals.
which I'll make another plug for. There's an interesting story just did today on Keith Olbermann. Now, people who are conservative probably won't want to listen to it, but Keith Olbermann is an expert on sports, on baseball, and on politics. And he did on his 40th broadcast on his podcast, this morning, he does a story about the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series in whatever it was, 1911 or whatever it was. And he talks about a reincarnation story. It's a really incredible, if you just go to the end of his podcast, he tells this, he calls himself an atheist, but he tells his story that'll knock you over about reincarnation and baseball. It's just unreal. You got a question there?
I think so. I got excited. I thought it was from Chris Rakowski.
Well, what's Joe's question?
It was a different ski on the end of that name, but it says, if Eric Davis asked you to keep the notes, the Oak notes, private until he passes, why go out with it now when without Oak or Eric Davis's permission?
Okay, because first of all, Oak went public.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, now that this thing is all public, it's time that I release these notes. I've held these notes for 20 years. Then Oak Shannon tweeted me and he said, I'm not going to block anything or something to that effect, but I'd like to see what's coming. I'd like to see the notes before they go out. So I sent him the thing and I explained where I got them from and all that kind of stuff. And as far as, unless he tweeted me late this morning, he didn't say anything. He just said, I didn't know what these notes were. What was this all about? And, you know, how did you get the notes? I explained everything to him. He didn't say anything. And as far as I was concerned, we were in the clear.
Wonderful. Then we have a random question. They want to know, what does McCausland know?
Probably everything. He was the main general that was telling the stories to Tom DeLong. I know that there was a guy, it was a friend of Pandolfi. I never made this public, but he was a friend of Pandolfi. He was, they were all trying to hire McCausland. all these guys, that's the thing, is they move out of this and people are trying to hire them for some company or something. This guy was trying to hire McCaslin and he went to Ron Pendolph and Ron was going to go and talk to McCaslin. That's the last I heard. But I would say McCaslin, I think he was the general, the main general. You see, he talks about how to declassify. He puts that memo out that goes to Podesta that says, if you're going to declassify, make sure you bring it to different agencies and NASA gets it. Otherwise, you're going to get, nobody's going to want to take it because it's not in their job jar. And that's the problem with UFOs. It doesn't fit into the State Department. They say, we're not UFO guys. And then NASA said, we're not UFO guys. Nobody wants to take it. So that's where McCaslin was actually giving advice to Tom DeLonge, which was exposed in the WikiLeaks about how to disclose. McCaslin was telling the White House how to make a disclosure announcement, how to bring this thing out without it blowing up in their face. And I would believe he was the guy. So when he met McCaslin, and McCaslin started to send him to all these people, and that's what people don't want to acknowledge. Like when Chris Mellon says, this is coming from the bottom up. There are no government people. This is not a drip down thing. Tom DeLonge had 20 sources, and Tom DeLonge did not go through the phone book and find them. They were given to Tom DeLonge. The first one he got, he went to do the thing at the Lockheed Skunk Works at the barbecue in the parking lot. And he said, would you like to introduce the president? And that was Weiss, who was tied into this UFO thing. And he said, yeah, I'll do the barbecue if I can talk with the head guy for 5 minutes. And he starts his pitch about how I can get the message to the young people of America. And he does mention UFOs. And then he gets the meeting to go into the skiff. And he sort of indicates it was at Area 51. He's in the skiff with the head scientist and another guy, and they're waiting for Weiss to come in the room. And that's when the head scientist says to him the whole thing about, what do you know about this? And he said, I think consciousness is involved. And then he said, that's all the head scientist wanted to talk about for 45 minutes was consciousness. And then Weiss comes in the room, and then they're questioning him about, he used to have a conspiracy website with all like QAnon stuff on it in 2012 and 2013. They said, what's with the website? Like, you know, what the heck? And then he said, well, you know, he's trying to justify. And then Robert Weiss walks in and they start talking, and he's justifying. He's not using UFOs, but he's saying, why you guys can't get it out? I can get it out. I got all these people. I can get to the young people. You guys are screwing this thing up. And that's when the guy says, okay, send them to the general. And then he gets sent to the intelligence guy sitting outside the Pentagon in this room. And they say, we're not here to do it. We're just here to move the football down the field. This does not happen in the White House. It does not happen in Congress. It happens when guys like this decide to take the football and move it down the field. Then they send it to NASA. NASA sends them to Ames. Ames sends them to the general. Then he gets sent to McKay. Then he gets sent. He was given all this material. And people say to me, oh no, he discovered this. He did not. He gets credit for running the pattern and bringing it all out, but he was given everything that he got.
Wow. That's a wow moment. And I've been looking, I see lots and lots of comments, but I don't see any direct questions, but I do want to give like an extreme shout out, because, you know, this story is sort of so big, and maybe that's what Project Unity isn't quite understanding. Like, you know, this story, I mean, even for us to sit down with Melinda could have made this a 4 or 5 hour thing. Like, I kind of know Jimmy Scott. Oh my God, I just combined them. That sounds like a prediction. But Fade to Black and Jimmy Church, you're going on with them tonight. You're going to talk about this.
Yeah.
Kind of kicked it over. Tomorrow night, you're going to be with Dave Scott, Spaced Out Radio. They're starting to promo each other's shows for you and to get this out. I know Dave has approached Melinda or has spoken with her. I asked Jimmy to do the same. I don't know if he will, but, you know, this is a power moment in the community. There were a lot of people coming together. Whatever this drama with Project Unity and Oak, whatever happened while we were supposed to be broadcasting live, it is what it is. I mean, this stuff's out there. We're going to keep pushing, you know, our end, and hopefully it does come together by the time, I don't know, next week, whatever anybody wants. There isn't any animosity here, except why isn't this full steam ahead? Nobody's trying to step on anybody's toes here. It's how can we schedule this to get 5 to 8 hours of content out all at once, instead of trying to drag it out for as long as possible. Like, there's no reason to drag it out. All the pieces of it are out there. It's putting them together now at this point. So please tune back in tonight to Fade to Black with Jimmy Church. You'll catch Grant on there. I'll be in the chat room going, woo, Grant, yay, Jimmy. And then another round tomorrow night with Dave and Spaced Out Radio. And we'll keep discussing this. Maybe we'll show some of Melinda's slides, because I had those on a slideshow ready to present. Yours were on a slide ready to present. So to be continued. Please, if anybody has any questions, tune in tonight and tune in tomorrow, and we'll try to get any questions you have answered, or contact me through my YouTube or through Facebook.
And we're supposed to do Melinda tomorrow, right?
Yep.
Okay. So tomorrow, say at noon tomorrow, 12:30 tomorrow, we're going to have another set of notes from this meeting. And because unless Jack Houck comes back from the dead in a ghost and tells Melinda not to release the documents, we're going to release them tomorrow. Melinda has released parts of these documents about a year ago, and she's going to release another set of notes from this meeting, and some of them parallel the notes I have. And that was the important part, that we got two sets of notes. And this is an important meeting. These are the guys, the Avery guys. These are the guys that know what's going on. These are the guys that may be leaking material. These are the guys that I've watched for 20 years, 25 years. And I say, whatever you think about them, whether you believe them, disbelieve them, hate them, love them, listen to them. They know stuff that you don't know. And listen carefully, and they'll, as I said with this Elizondo thing, we said, well, it's a hypothetical situation. You got one company that gets a part, one pump company does get a part. When you listen to that, you go, hey, maybe he's actually saying something here. And so tomorrow we're going to do Melinda's notes, and we'll compare them to, a little bit to ours. And you'll see that there was another guy, Jack Houck, who I believe was from the aerospace community, who died, and his notes were given to Melinda. And we're going to go through this again, and we will bring up some of the stuff that Melinda thought was important. And she'll probably want to tie together all these Avery people fit together and how they move through history.
I will point out Melinda's most recent interview with Thomas Fessler, and I can't think of the name of his show right now, but Melinda dropped bombs in that. So if anybody can't wait till tomorrow, go look up Thomas Fessler's site, look up Melinda's latest interview. And then also, Melinda has released a lot of this over the years. I know her presentation she did for UFO Denmark is where a lot of these slides or parts of them can be found already. But yes, continue with us tomorrow. Do your homework, folks, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can with more exciting theoretical physics.
Gossip.
Thanks, everybody. I don't know how to end this either. I just hit end. So thanks. See you next time.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening. That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.